Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Javier, I'm really glad that we moved this show to an intimate venue, you know, as opposed to the larger venue that we were going to have it in before, aren't you?
Yeah, man. We're doing it for the fans. You know, we want to make sure that they're really happy and really like close together and really feel the energy.
That's right. That's right. We just couldn't do that in the big arena that we had scheduled. Oh man, that was great. I got a big kick out of Michael Cole trying to spin that whole thing with the intimate experience language. My goodness gracious.
Well, I mean, they're masters at that. They're masters at at BS. Just leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, hey, they are. I guess on one hand, like, you know, you have to say, okay, they're promoting. So, hey, but that was so egregious that I don't know. It made me laugh. It made me laugh. Typical WWE. Here's the thing though, Javier, like not a lot stood out on this episode of SmackDown to me. Like that was a higher point of the show. I don't know whether it was the holiday weekend and they just were, kind of expecting things to go a certain way or not go a certain way. But I kind of felt that this was like very much a filler episode. We didn't get a lot of movement on storylines. We didn't get a ton of movement, on the SmackDown side of Hell in a Cell either. So I think we could start in a lot of different places, but rarely do we do this. But what was your high level take on the show and its pace and its content for tonight?
Well, I until Kevin Owens came out, I thought this might have been one of the worst shows I had ever seen. There were segments that were up to that point. There were segments that were like almost nonsensical. The thing with the Lotharios and Shanky, I don't think there are enough drugs in the world for me to make sense of what was happening. I mean, once Kevin Owens came out, I mean, that's like some of the best stuff WWE has done in a while, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and it's all because, those are probably two of the best performers that they have. And then the rest of the show was fine. But that and Aaliyah, that first half was like, I was thinking about just texting and telling you I'm out, I'm done, that's it. I'm gone.
Well, I'm glad you didn't do that because I need, I need a partner in crime on the show tonight. But yeah, like, you had the Usos come out, they started the show and cut what felt like a genuine promo, except that, let me ask you, like, did you figure that like some sort of like Alexa Bliss style, curve was coming with the kind of the, in terms of how genuine the Usos were with thanking the fans and whatnot?
Yes. Mainly, I kind of had an idea it was going to come because that's just what they do. I was hoping it didn't. I'll let to see if one of the if a caller brings it up, and if not, I'll bring it up at the end. But I was really hoping that they would just have kept with it if they're going to go that way. But when they just started stalling, I'm like, they're it's going to be a swerve, isn't it? And then sure enough, it was the swerve. We didn't need you. And I mean, yeah. How many times have we seen this? I mean, this is the whole gimmick of Edge's faction. We don't need the fans. I mean, it's like,
yes,
one note.
Yeah, one note. And here's the thing. Like, I guess this is a good place to start because you're coming off what I thought last week's SmackDown was really well constructed, well put together. You can't have a show like that every week because you don't have that type of main event every week. But you had the Usos win the undisputed, unify the tag team championships. And Like, you could have gotten more out of that this week if you had the Usos cut a different promo. Like, to me, the business in them winning the Undisputed Unified Tag Team titles is, like, the dominance of the bloodline. And instead of, like, selling that and driving that home, they kind of went for this silly kind of comedy thing. And yeah, they got the Riddle versus – or they got the Riddle to come out and Nakamura and all that. But I just don't think they got as much on the back end of last week's success than they could have.
Yeah, it was just because had they not done the swerve, okay, well, they're doing this. Maybe it's a babyface turn or whatever. And I mean, and that's the thing. It felt so unnatural that, you know, you have to have been expecting that to happen. But they dragged it on for so long that I was, you know, I'm like, you know, it was just so frustrating watching that segment. I mean, that kind of set the tone for me for the entire night. Cause I'm like, even though I really liked the whole Shinsuke, cause it makes that storyline makes sense. And I like it when a storyline makes sense. Both are tag team wrestlers whose partners were taken out by the bloodline. So now they team up together to go up. That's like a classic storyline. It's awesome. You know, but it just in the way that's presented, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, when you add that in to the fact that they haven't really gotten all that much out of Roman being Undisputed Unified Champion either, it's like, you know, you had this faction with these big wins, and like, you don't have like a specific direction that they're going to go in now. And I think that's, you know, that eats up, like, you know, your championships. You've got your tag team titles on one act, you've got your world titles on one act, and on an act that's not going to be around as much as usual. I think you got to like put some time into developing something for the Usos now, if they're going to be kind of the lead part of the bloodline when Roman's not there. And man, you just didn't, I don't think they set a good tone for the show, as you mentioned, but also for this title reign either. I mean, where do you expect them to go from here? I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to be on the Hell in a Cell card either.
I don't think they know.
Right.
No, and I don't think that they have plotted a course, you know, because, I mean, reports were that they didn't make the decision to actually unify the belt until the day of the show. So, you know, you'd think that you would have a conversation of what comes next. I don't think they even know yet. I think you're just going to get this Shinsuke Riddle team up match out of the way. Maybe that'll push you, a week or two. Maybe that might show up on the pay-per-view, like at the last minute added, you know, but we'll see. It just feels like when you're missing all your stars, you're missing, like, you know, pretty much everybody. And, you know, Roman was on and it this show really felt, you know, like it missed Roman, you know, this one specific, you know, particularly really, you know, cause nothing was really holding it together.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah, this was you really saw like that the star power gap without him on the show. And then when you think about who the stars were on the show tonight, Riddle, who's a Raw guy, Kevin Owens, who's a Raw guy. I mean, and then you got Drew a little bit later, and that was fine, but also kind of in a feud that he's not really involved in. So yeah, SmackDown, they've got their work cut out for them. Let's take a quick pause there. We'll set the table for the show, and then we'll open up the phone lines and start talking to some callers. A little lighter than usual, I think, due to the holiday and the content of the show tonight. So if you
I really am about to start taking it personally.
Why?
Oh, no. Just, oh. Sometimes it happens. It seems we have, you know, usually I think it's also I get tapped for a lot of holidays, so it's just a coincidence.
Well, yeah,
I'm hoping it's not something I said.
it's nothing that you said, Javier. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the May 27th, 2022 edition of WWE SmackDown. I'm PW Torch assistant editor, Zach Haydor, filling in for Wade tonight. He'll be on the VIP side of things a little bit later, running down the show on the Wade Keller Hotline. You can go VIP now, special sale, one of the only times in the year that we've got some special discounted pricing. So now is your opportunity. Take advantage of it ahead of the Double or Nothing pay-per-view this weekend. There's lots of content already up, previewing Double or Nothing. The post-pay-per-view roundtable will be up after the show for VIP members with Wade, Todd, and other guests. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. You can hear and see and read all the stuff that comes with it. Archives of PW Torch newsletters, ad-free version of pwtorch.com, access to so many different podcasts covering anything from New Japan to Ring of Honor to my show On the Canvas, talking about the art of wrestling. It's just a vast array of podcasts that there's something for everybody. So give us a shot, pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear with me tonight is that of Javier Machado from pwtorch.com. Javier, a pleasure, man. An absolute pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
For having me, Zach.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and do this just, you know, because why not? I like it. Yeah, I just couldn't do a show. You know, now that I know how to do it without, like, breaking the board, it's like, got to do it whenever I can. Oh, my goodness. You have a busy couple weeks with your pay-per-view preview columns, Double or Nothing this week, and then Hell in a Cell next.
Yeah, I'm actually cheating this time for Double or Nothing. I'm waiting for the countdown to the thing to so I don't have to do as much research, because if they didn't prepare for the pay-per-view, I'm not going to prepare for the primer. So, yeah, and then get a head start on the Hell in a Cell, because I don't think much is going to change between now and then.
No, I don't think so either.
At the rate that the storylines are going.
No, right. Exactly. Keep it locked to pwtorch.com for Javier's pay-per-view previews. Great way to get you ready for the show. And they'll be up, you know, sometime tomorrow or early Sunday. We'll open up the phone lines right now, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you're listening to us, press 1 if you want to get on to chat. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be checking those as the show progresses. With that said, we will start the show. We'll start off today with 802. I believe this is Nick. Nick, welcome into the show. What'd you think of SmackDown?
Hey, guys. Hey, Zach. Javier, how you doing tonight? This is Nick from Brattleboro, Vermont. And just to get it out of the way, what dirty word did WWE use this week, Tahana? They made such a big deal out of, we have a different name for Raquel's final move. So what does it mean?
Tejada, it really does not mean anything as far as I'm aware. The root word, or the root part of it, teja is like a roof tile. So if you put those two words together, tejada would be like roof. So I mean, maybe that's what they're going for. Tejada is also a name, so it could be a location. Might be, you know, referring to that, or it might be slang that I'm just not aware with, because you know I hang out with English speaking folk. So if it is a new slang, you know, I did look it up on Urban Dictionary, and besides the fact that everything's a, you know, sexual thing, I didn't see anything that really popped out. So, but yeah,
I just
a shingle could be it, because, like, you know, shingles falling off the roof, and that's what she's doing.
Right.
She's taking someone on top and falling down. So that might be it. I don't know.
I hope her finishing move is not the you know, shingles falling off a roof. Like,
it's the only thing I can think of, though. So.
I just thought it was so funny that it was Cole made such a big point out of saying it, like, what, 3 times or something, and it wasn't bleeped. I just thought that was funny. So filling up with Raquel is, man, they have got her scared to death not to smile.
I mean,
she's listen, she's beautiful. She's got a gorgeous smile, but she's going into the ring to fight somebody, for crying out loud. Maybe a first brief smile when she first hits the stage, but then, you know, put the game face on. I think she's great. I like her look. I like, you know, that she's not a athletic model. She's an athlete. But, boy, I don't know what they're doing with her, and I'm worried they're going to totally destroy her by rushing her so fast against Ronda.
I'm glad you brought this up, there was a lot in this segment that I didn't particularly care for. Number one, you know, you spend a lot of the last few days, you know, promoting the fact that you're going to have this rematch, Ronda Rousey versus Raquel Rodriguez, right? And it's like, for one thing, that rematch is kind of ridiculous because Rodriguez just lost. She lost in clean fashion. So, like, you know, okay, why is she getting another?
Which never happened, by the way.
Yeah, no, never. And, okay, and then it lasts 1 minute. And so that in itself, I think, is just bad business. Bad business for WWE to be advertising something like that and giving it 1 minute before it gets interrupted by, you know, the jobbers of the women's division. And then the smiling thing, I think, is absolutely a problem. There is a way to showcase that, as you mentioned, Nick, but not lean into it constantly. I mean, it's constant. It's as she's walking down the ring, as she's posing, when she's, you know, before the match starts, after the match, like, she has to have more range than that, and she does. We've seen her have more range than that in her NXT run, and I think you're kind of you're putting her into just one bucket if you do that. Finn Balor had the same issue, you know, a handful of years ago when he was on the main roster after his injury. You know, he was smiling all the damn time, and it's like you can't take him seriously when he's about to go fight because of that. So, like, look, as you mentioned, Nick, smile at the top of the ramp, but then, you know, like, show the emotion of the story that you're telling. Show the emotion of trying to win a match. Like, there's a lot more there with her than just, you know, than just the nice smile. And, like, this is WWE going way, way overboard with it. I didn't like it at all, Javier. What did you think?
Well, I mean, you know, WWE is aware there's more than one type of smile, right? Because
I don't know.
Because, I mean, you could also smile and not be, you know, grinning ear to ear in a, you know, because obviously they want us to know how happy she is to be here. But, you know, you could still smile on the way to the ring. Just don't, you know, or smirk or, you know, be confident and not, you know, that's the thing. It's not so much even the smile, but is the exuding the fact that you're trying to convey to the audience, I'm just happy to be here. You're not looking, you know, you're not conveying that you're looking forward to a fight. You're not conveying that you're looking forward to win. You're just saying that, you know, hey, look, I'm on the show.
Yeah, I agree. Well said. It's like, hey, smile, and that's a great point. I mean, there's different types of ways you can emote that. Smirk here, there, like, it's the same one constantly. The other thing that I don't like about it is you totally can get the sense that she's being produced to do that. There's nothing natural about it. If it was like, hey, you know, that's just her, and you were able to sense that that's her personality and that's part of the character and it's authentic, okay, I think I'd still probably argue, hey, you got to add something into the repertoire there, but this feels so produced, as in, like, stand here and smile for this amount of time and then start your walk. Like, it's, yeah, it's not going to do her any favors. Nick, great point, and back to you.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because she has such a great look, and, I mean, I'm very impressed when she stands with her back to the camera and spreads her lats out. I mean, you know, she's ripped.
Yeah, she is.
And then just one more thing on the women. Oh, what's the protector's name again? I can't remember anymore.
Xia Li.
Xia Li. Yeah. in the back there, they have this thing where it's like, okay, and Shotzi is talking and tells her, and she like grabs something out of the lock and walks out, and then we don't see her again. I mean, it's just like that poor woman. I mean, it's like, what? I mean, you know, Shotzi got locked in the thing. Aaliyah is playing around with the key, but what happened to Xia Li? She just like vanished.
Okay. That was really bizarre. And, you know, I think Javier Pardo, maybe what you were talking about in this first hour just being just a mess. It's like, wait, how do you – I just don't know how you do that from just a straight production standpoint. It's like she's involved in this, and then all of a sudden she's not. Like, to me, that's just kind of unacceptable for a television show that's on prime time on broadcast television. Like, come on now.
I think it's even worse that I forgot that she was in the scene to begin with. You know, until Nick brought her up, I'm like, yeah, that's right, we didn't see her again. I was more focused on the horrible, and I cannot stress how horrible the job of whatever Aaliyah was produced to do. That was just atrocious. Both that and then like the weird camera cut to her being on the other side of the. I just don't get it. It was so cartoony. I mean, I don't know if you two are aware that Netflix basically shut down their animated studio. They really should go check out, you know, the people who they let go and just start animating their scenes, because everybody's a cartoon. Everybody is a cartoon. You know,
yeah,
so like just might as well just animate them at this point, because it's just no one reacts like Aaliyah did during that segment at all.
And I mean, I don't think he can blame anymore the Sasha Banks Naomi thing. You know, they've had 2 weeks to make an adjustment to how they're going to book the women's division, and I think they're making all the wrong choices. I mean, I think they should go with Natalya against Ronda or something, and not sacrifice Raquel. And that's it on my women's statement. And then. Just two quick points, and I'll let you guys go, is I think it's hysterical that they couldn't sell out what they set up Allegiant Stadium for, and they had to move it to the Garden Arena. I just think that's just hysterical. And then it's so weird what they're doing what with the Bloodline. Even before Jay started his, oh, it's all you, we love you, and all this, the Usos were getting cheered. I mean, they're always getting cheered. Roman's getting cheered. And I don't know whether they sweeten the booze or whatever, but I don't know what they're going to do without Roman there, and he's not going to be on the pay-per-view. And Randy's out now, and I don't know what they're gonna do. And with that, I'll let you guys go and have a great Memorial Day.
Yeah, you too, Nick. Thanks for calling. Always good to talk to you, and have a really good weekend. Yeah, Javier. I mean, we touched on this a little bit, but we can dive a little deeper. Like, you know, they did get a positive reaction. I don't know. I mean, they get a star reaction, I think, first and foremost. At least that's my perception, where it's like Bloodline comes out. They're the biggest act on the show for sure, arguably across the entire company. Roman Reigns absolutely is. And so I think there's some of that going on where it's just like, okay, these Reigns and Reigns along with the Usos are just on a higher pedestal. And so they get a reaction that you know, is rooted in that. But... You know, it has the potential to go the wrong way if you really want them just out there. They're getting heat. And I think Roman can bring it, and he can, you know, pivot a crowd really well. Today, the Usos did it kind of with the trick. But, you know, when you look at that act right now, do you say to yourself, hey, what, this is a problem with, like, hey, they're getting cheers, there's a bit of a mixed reaction until they do something? Or is it just, hey, they're big stars, and WWE needs big stars. So, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Well, I think it's a little bit of people cheer when they come out because they're, you know, happy to see them and in appreciation of what they're doing. And I think there's a lot a segment of the – I think you see this more in AEW with MJF, but I think there's a big segment also that boos them out of respect after they get that initial cheer out of the way. You know, so, I mean, it is hard to tell because of the, you know, the sweetening of the crowd and stuff. But, you know, you do see some people in the back, like, you know, when they come out cheering and then, like, you know, when they start talking or something, then they start, you know, the fingers down and stuff. So I think, you know, there are people who do respect and play along with it. You know, I think it is kind of hard to get, like, legit heat nowadays. Because the only thing that draws out legit heat is probably going to, like, you know, I think we're at the point where in society where, you know, legit heat. Well, I mean, why do I want to really get angry and really feel negative emotions when I could just change the channel?
Yeah. Or like you get quote unquote legit heat with, you know, the Happy Corbin gimmick or something like that. That's legit, but also like not really. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because I mean, I was when Lambert was down here with AEW, we couldn't hear what he was saying. We're booing so hard, but it was almost like we were trying to drown it out. Less than like legit heat that we hate him, and more like we want to like show that we can, you know, we'll play along, you know, and because of the fact that, you know, Wade brings this up a few times that the WWE audience is a, you know, is a prop, and, you know, and I think that, you know, when the story's going well, people are going to play along with it.
Yeah. Agreed. Well said. So is there a depth issue, you know, on SmackDown right now? I mean, like, I agree, there is. And, you know, did you see anybody tonight where you can say, okay, like, with Reigns out, you can elevate this guy, you can elevate this guy, you can elevate this guy? I mean, Drew McIntyre there, I think Gunther was probably one of the better parts of the show tonight.
Yeah.
Just because, if nothing else, it was just consistent to the point, and he's well defined. I mean, maybe he could be somebody that can take a bigger step up. I don't know, Ricochet. I just don't know. I mean, it's a huge drop off when you're kind of going to Ricochet, you know, right away in this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Gunther and also Ludwig. I'm surprised that Ludwig didn't eat a pin here and that he looked so strong, you know, how strong he looked. Yeah. That is, you know, I still prefer Marcel Bartel and Walter, if you understand what I'm saying, you know, the non-WWE presentation. Uh-huh. But, you know, we live in the WWE world with them now, and I don't think, you know, this is about as best presentation you can. They look like monsters, both of them together. And, you know, the only problem is that this would make sense if they just start tearing through people. But, you know, again, that goes to the death chart. Like, who are they going to tear through? So,
right.
So eventually you're going to get into the, you know, going 50-50. I'm pretty sure they'll probably use Kaiser to protect Gunther. But, you know, it really would have behooved them to actually have a roster that they could actually rip through. And, you know, I mean, I know they did a couple of jobbers, but, you know, people that are lower on the card for them to take out. And the thing is that you would think that a feud between Gunther and Ricochet for the title, Gunther's just going to tear through him. You know, I don't think much hope for Ricochet being paired up with him at this point.
Yeah, right. I agree. I mean, yeah, you almost have to have him tear through it. You may not want to because of the depth issue, but I mean, I think that's where the Gunther character needs to go.
I mean, you can't, because I mean, who, what are the other baby faces you're gonna deal with? Maybe bring back the Viking Raiders. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what their home show is. I don't remember what their home show is, but they literally have like next to nobody that they, you know, on a lower level that they can deal with. So,
yeah.
You know.
Let's keep it going with phone calls. 619, you are up next. 619, thanks for calling. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is William from San Diego.
Hey, William, good to talk to you.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing good.
I just want
your dog
to,
is doing good too, eh?
No, that's the neighbor's dog. So
okay.
I'm not going to blame my dog for this one. I'll let him off the leash for this one.
no problem.
But I wanted to circle back something that Nick kind of brought up briefly, which is the news we got yesterday, I think, about it was confirmed today on WWE or on SmackDown that they are changing from Allegiant Stadium to MGM Arena or whatever it's called. The whole thing is just kind of weird, and I think it's indicative of just that the fact that I think it pretty much confirms that Roman Reigns is not going to be there, because it's not like they were, you know, totally bombing in terms of sales. I think the report I read was that they had sold around 17,000 out of a 25,000 capacity. And I was there last year, and 25 is roughly around what they did last year, maybe a little more because they also had John Cena there, and so they can, you know, sell a little more seats with that name. But, yeah, I think this pretty much confirms that, you know, they had those 17,000 seats, and they realized, man, we don't have any big matches that we can advertise to push us over the edge to those extra seats. And I mean, is there any other thing you can read out of this that we're just not going to have Roman Reigns or Brock Lesnar or any big names showing up until potentially like SummerSlam?
Yeah. I mean, I think you can definitely make that kind of prediction. You know, I know that Roman Reigns was in the plans for the show for a while, but maybe that did change. I look at this as, you know, a couple different ways. Like, one, they are certainly going to lean into, you know, the Money in the Bank ladder matches to sell this, right? They typically do that for Money in the Bank anyway, and I don't think we're going to get a different strategy there. The other thing is, I think you're right. Like, when you go, hey, what do we have for Roman Reigns at Money in the Bank? All right, it's Riddle, you know, if that's where they were going. You know, it's like, okay, that's not, you know, gonna sell a ton of, it's gonna sell some tickets, but it's not gonna sell like Roman Reigns, John Cena would, you know, in Allegiant Stadium. It just won't. So you can add that into it, and then you can say to yourself too, if you're WWE, like, look, okay, we're happy with the 17,000 number. You know, it costs more to rent Allegiant Stadium than it does MGM Grand Garden, I'm assuming. So you know the business of the show becomes stronger when you make that pivot too. So I think there's a lot of things at hand. I don't know that it's a warning sign, Javier, for WWE that they're having to switch the show. It doesn't look good, that's for sure. But I don't know that you can make any broad conclusions about their health as a company because of this either.
Well, I mean, yeah, you can't talk. I don't know about the health of the company because that's still based on the number, you know, the money they're bringing in from their TV deals. Just, you know, whether the future, you know, and they are ostensibly building up people in NXT, which then they'll rename and bring over. You would think, hopefully, that some of those will land. But yeah, I mean, I'm also. Because didn't changing venues also coincide with them removing Roman? I think Roman, Brock, and I think they might have also removed Ronda Rousey from the poster also.
From the poster, yes, they did.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm wondering if they, you know, to try to head off any, you know, because I mean that's three people you have on the poster that are not going to, if they're not, and none of them are going to be on your show.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I know that the card subject changed, but I think that might draw more of an ire. And I think if you pulled them off the poster and then essentially refund everybody their money back and say, oh yeah, we're gonna go ahead and we're just doing this to change, I mean, I don't want to start conspiracy theory or anything, but that I could think that that might be also, if these people are not going to be here, you're going to have a lot of, you know, people who bought the tickets assuming those three guys are going to be there, or, you know, and they're not. So I think you'd want to blunt anything and, you know, any like pushback when it comes to that.
Yeah.
So, like, false advertising pushback.
That's a good take too, because yeah, they are refunding everybody who bought tickets for Allegiant Stadium. They're refunding, and then they have first shot to buy them again at the new venue. So good detective work on that one, Javier. I like it. That's
yeah,
a good that's
yeah,
a really
total,
good point.
Total speculation, but you know.
Yeah, sure. What else?
Yeah, I think that's a good point about the refund. That might be something into that. I was also going to talk about the opening segment. I think I'm with you guys that I just wasn't a fan of the direction they took the whole, you know, the trite, we want to thank the fans, oh no, psych, we're actually still bad thing they've done a million times. And yeah, I just feel like it diminished some of the heat that they had built from last week. I mean, I was so impressed at the reaction that they had gotten at the end of that show with some of the crowd shots that they had. And for them to even, like, even if they still ended up being heels at the end of that segment, for them to hint and to invite the crowd to, like, cheer them, even if it was for just a bit, I thought it undid some of that work that they had done. And then another thing that I really disliked, and I think I brought it up on Monday with Wade and his co-host, is, you know, Riddle just kind of showing up from Raw with no real explanation as to how someone from Raw can just jump to SmackDown and vice versa. Like, all pretense of the brand split is pretty much done. Like, they don't care. They obviously need stars, and they're in a bit of a pickle now with Orton out, with Reigns out, with Brock not being around for the moment. So that's kind of understandable. But at least they used to make up BS excuses back in the day, you know, like the wild card rule or the brand-to-brand invitation or whatever it's called. Now they just don't really care, and it's like, I don't know, are you guys bothered by that at all, or are you kind of like, just shrugging your shoulders, like, yeah, whatever.
You know, I just think it's just bad business to do that. You have the brand split, you should stick to it, and if you're not sticking to it, you should have a reason. I mean, that is like my foundational belief as to how they should go about this, and I like the brand split. If you do that, however, it is abundantly clear by now that they just don't, they're not going to abide by that. They want to be able to have their cake and eat it too, and they do for the most part, and they bring stars over when they need to, and they kind of, they don't really look back. So, you know, I think if you go down the rabbit hole of trying to defend this, you could say, all right, well, you know, both the tag team titles are on the Usos, who are on SmackDown, and so, you know, if Riddle, he's a tag team wrestler, so he's going to go, you know, where the tag team titles are. It's got holes everywhere, but I guess you could, that's one way you can explain it. But the bottom line is, Javier, that they don't care about, you know, being buttoned up on that. And so, because they want to be able to move the chess pieces on the board whenever they want to. And so I think we're just going to get what we're going to get for quite some time here.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all due to the lack of depth. And so that's why,
right,
I'm cold. I'm more towards the shoulder shrug, mainly because your other option is to end the brand split altogether. And but then you just end up saying the same people over and over again. I mean, you're kind of already doing that, but at least you have your undercard that is only being, you know, on one show. because you know I don't want to see I like seeing Corbin on SmackDown, but I don't need to see him on two shows. I don't need to see Shanky on two shows. You know,
yes.
I don't, you know, so I don't see almost on two shows. So you know, as long as they keep that, as long as they keep that and only have like the really, you know, like the Kevin Owens and Riddle crossing over, I'll just shrug my shoulders until they build some depth from, you know, hopefully NXT or wherever they come from or whatever this, you know, we're only going to have like three wrestlers on the roster with the thing that they're going for. You know, and whatever happens in the next stage, but it does feel a little bit like, you know, it's in the transition phase with, like, you know, Roman Reigns cutting back his time, you know, and if you think about it, like, well, who's the biggest star at this point? Who's a regular? Randy Orton?
Yeah, I mean, yep, I think so. God, I mean, Drew, you know, he's up there. I think, but
yeah,
probably not on the level that
I have him as the second one. He would have been the highest one, but I think there's a. I think they missed striking when the iron was hot. A lot of that to do, you know, was due to the COVID. But you know, I don't see him the same way as he, you know, when he was champion during the COVID. At this point, and you kind of felt it. Like I didn't see, that was one where I did notice the sound sweetening a lot because the crowd mm-hmm. sounded like they were going nuts, but everybody was sitting down, nobody was standing up.
Yeah, The noise came a little late too. If you mm-hmm. like go back and watch the entrance, like his music hits and it's like there's some reaction, of course, but then yeah. you can hear it all come like right away after that. So I'm with you. You hit on it, and we talked about it already. The depth here, like that, is causing a lot of problems. And you know, maybe it is time that you have to dip down into NXT and you know, I don't know. Get Grayson Waller up here or get Bron Breakker. I don't know, but I do know that that after watching tonight's show, like they are in need of even like just upper mid card star power. I think at this point, it's such a severe drop when we haven't talked about this. I'll make sure that we do that. When Shanky gets as much time as he did on the show, like that's not a recipe. That's not a recipe for success. William, back to you. Any anything else on the show tonight? Any other topics or questions?
Yeah, a little related to Roman still and Drew McIntyre, I guess, while we were kind of on that topic. My first question on that, there's two questions, but my first one is, and I'll admit first and foremost that I do have a bit of an anti-Drew bias. I never got the whole thing with him or anything.
Drew,
so
right? You said Drew. It came in wrong for a second. I'm like, you said Drew, right?
Yeah, Drew. D-R-E-W,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm like, well, wait a minute.
No worries. Do you guys feel like they kind of set him up to fail a little coming out as the surprise guy? Like, they build it up so long, like throughout the entire show, like from last week, who's going to be the surprise, you know, ally for the New Day, and moments before his music hit, it just almost kind of hit me that, oh man, well, they don't really have anybody else. The only person that's been kind of missing for a few weeks was Drew, because he was doing the whole Cardiff show promo abroad in Europe. It's not going to be him, is it? And he came out and it was kind of like a little bit of a letdown for me. And like I say, you can take that with a grain of salt for me, never being much of a Drew guy myself. But yeah, you guys talked about the crowd reaction and it didn't seem like it wasn't like this mega pop, like, oh my God, he's here kind of reaction. It was just kind of like, oh, Drew's here. Yay.
Yeah. I think a couple of things as far as this goes. One, I thought the main event, the match itself was good. There wasn't much on the line in terms of like stakes, but for what it was, I thought the match itself was entertaining, and the crowd seemed, you know, from what I could tell anyway, kind of trying to dodge the piped in noise that they were into what was going on. Javier, I thought that the hype was okay for what they ended up delivering, you know, like I don't think they laid it on too thick that it was going to be some big surprise. It was just, hey, we've got somebody in mind, and you know, that's that. And it was not a surprise in terms of who it was necessarily, but it was a top level guy, you know. And you know, given the depth on the show, like, you can't get much bigger of a star than Drew McIntyre. So I was okay with that payoff. Were you?
Yeah, I mean, I had the same thought that he was the most likely candidate because of the fact that he had been out for a bit. So much so that I was more like annoyed by the fact that they were trying to be so coy with who it was going to be. Because I mean, like the only other person I would say that would be like anything that would be like semi interesting would be Lashley if he were to show up. You know, seeing Lashley square up against Sheamus or something like that. You know, and to give, you know, to like elevate Lashley into like a position where like, oh, he's the special guy. I thought that he would be the only other person I could see in that role. Outside of that, like, you know, unless something crazy and they brought back Cesaro for once, for one match, you know. But outside of the craziness, is like Drew, you know, Drew was like 99% who was going to be. That might also, you know, have you know, played to the reaction of the crowd, where, you know, it was such the obvious choice that when he came out, it's like, oh, okay, so yeah.
Right. Yeah. No. You're right. And I do want to just give him credit. I thought the matches were good. I thought they hooked him, you know, once they got going. Do you, Javier, get the sense that this is going to be the end of the New Day, you know, Sheamus, Butch, Ridge Holland feud? Is like, did we just witness the blow-off? It's been going on for quite some time. I don't know where those teams go if they don't have each other right now, but like, was that your sense that this thing is done now? Babyfaces go over?
I'm praying. I really am. I'm praying that this is over. Yeah, and in terms of the match, I actually thought it was one of their more better put together matches, because a lot of their matches just don't have stories inside the match. And you know, Xavier, you know, showed, like, you know, Xavier and Kofi showed anger, trying to, you know, get anger for what happened to Big E, and you know, so it was, well, psychologically, and like the story they were telling inside the match was actually pretty good. You know, the fact that it was in existence at all was, you know, is something. But but there was, you know, there was a story to the match itself, not just the fact that we're getting together to, you know, solve these issues.
Yeah. Yep. Well said. William, back to you. Anything else for us tonight on SmackDown?
Yeah. And I think a little bit of a comparison I can draw, and it's not to that level, that ludicrous level, but it was kind of like Countdown to Cody, you know. It was a little like, okay, what makes Drew so special that they need to like tease him as a special surprise appearance at the end of the show? And you know, again, it's not to that level of Countdown to Cody where it's just absurd. It borders on being, you know, kind of farcical. But it was kind of like, it's Drew McIntyre, you know. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was Roman, and kind of circling back to that. It does seem like we already talked about, it doesn't seem like he's advertised for Money in the Bank. Probably the soonest we're going to see him defend that his titles is at SummerSlam, unless they do like a one-off at one of a random SmackDown or a Raw show or something. And I think both shows are clearly just lacking from that, you know, central prop, that heavyweight championship, that MacGuffin, that thing that other characters can chase and you know, strive for. And it just, both shows are just, they don't feel as important if they don't have that championship there. So I know this is kind of a long-term booking question. I know the big rumor is that WWE are hoping for The Rock at WrestleMania. Would you have Roman hold the titles until then? Because at this point, I'm kind of already just over, like, thinking of Roman holding those titles all the way to WrestleMania and barely having any appearances with this new limited schedule is just kind of making me groan a little. And even as an anti-Drew guy, I'm just kind of hoping that they'll just, you know, put the title on him at that Cardiff show and, you know, have that be that. And they can make a new guy out of Drew with, or make him an even bigger deal with that match. And I think Roman is big enough that that Rock-Roman match can hold itself, just being, you know, two bloodline guys, I guess, fighting each other on a big stage, on a main event stage, and have that be the match without the titles. What do you guys think?
Javier, what do you think?
No, you got ahead of me on my predictions. Yeah, I do have Drew winning at Clash of the Castle. It's pretty much, you know, pretty much the only thing that makes sense. So, and he'll only win one of the belts, obviously. I think that that's most likely what I'm going to do. And I do think he does keep one of the I do think he keeps the other belt until he gets to, you know, until WrestleMania. Because even though, you know, The Rock and The Rock and Reigns would be a huge match by itself, it could always be bigger. That's why they unified the titles between Brock and Reigns.
Yeah. To answer the question straight up, like, I think Roman Reigns is going to have that Universal Championship for the match against The Rock at WrestleMania. You have Roman Reigns on this journey, on this story, 600 plus days now, you know, and you're close to that match. I mean, right? Like, you got less than a year to go. Like, I just at this point would stay the course and make that match as big as it possibly can be, because it's the biggest match that they can put on right now. And so I make sure, no matter what, that match has as much juice as possible. The good thing is they do have two world titles. I think it makes sense for Drew to take the belt. As you mentioned, Javier, I also think it makes sense for him not to either. Like, and you know, you go in with this scorching hot Roman Reigns who hasn't been pinned in whatever 3 years at that point, and then you have him go against The Rock. So I can see, you know, there's pros and cons to both. But regardless, you know, Reigns is going to have one of those belts going into WrestleMania next year, William. I'm pretty certain about that.
Yeah, and I'd agree with the point of trying to make that match as big as it can. But I think with the latest WrestleMania, we kind of saw what WWE's way of booking of, yeah, let's make this match as big as it can be. But who cares about how we're going to book the rest of the, you know, the pay-per-views to come? You know, let's just worry about right now. Right now, Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns is the most stupendous or the biggest WrestleMania main event in history, or whatever they called it. Doesn't matter who walks out. Well, it does matter who walks out champion, but it doesn't matter, like, if we have any contenders lined up for Roman or whatever. We'll deal with that later. And I just don't trust that come, you know, May or June of next year, they'll have any other credible contenders for Roman, because I'm assuming Roman will, like, I'd have Roman win and beat The Rock and stay champion if he's walking in with both titles. So, I mean, coming out of WrestleMania, it just feels like if there are barely any credible opponents for Roman right now, I feel like at that point it might be like a point of no return where, like, who even is there at that point? Like, I know we're dealing with, you know, a year in the future, and someone might get hot and someone, they could build someone up to that level. But I mean, it's WWE. I don't think they can. I don't think they'll have that foresight to, like, have someone getting big wins up to that point. Someone that could be like a credible opponent for Roman coming out of WrestleMania. So I'm just like, I would just get the titles out of Roman.
We'll see what they do. We'll see what they do. I mean, they got a lot of money invested in Roman now, and you know that Rock match is big business. So we'll see. We'll see soon enough. Thanks, William. I really appreciate the phone call. Have a nice Memorial Day weekend.
Thanks, you guys too. Just one real quick note, because in case some people are wondering, Nick, I asked about the new finisher move for Raquel. I think it's Tejana Bomb, which means, you know, Texan, like, she's from Texas, I think. So That's it.
I got to go back and listen to that because I heard Tejada with a D. Yeah, if it were Tejana, that is Texan bomb. I got to go back in here because I heard it with a D. So
that makes more sense. No, so hopefully
it does make a little more sense. And you know, it's Michael Cole and Pat McAfee saying it. So you know, something might have been lost in translation, but I do think I'm like 99% sure it is Tejana. But I think
that would make
all
a lot more sense.
Memorial. And I did a quick Wikipedia page, and I do think she's from Texas. So, I think that's the likely explanation here.
Good. Well, I'm glad we uncovered that mystery. Good stuff, William. Thank you. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. All right, Javier, you know, we got 443. We're going to get to you here in a quick second. Thank you so much for holding. But before we do that, Javier, I want to talk about the Shanky, Jinder Mahal, whatever that was. And we don't need to spend too much time on it, but, like, what the heck was that? Is that like, hey, we're trying to give Shanky something to do on TV, or is that, oh my goodness, we don't have anything else for the show, you know, let's just do this, and we won't see a continuation of this madness moving forward. Where's your head at on what their plan is for this?
I think they've been teasing dissension between him and Jinder. And, I mean, first off, I got mad vibes of – and I've been trying to remember the guy's name all since I saw it. The one that the Jackal – what was the name of the group? And he had the guy who eventually started dancing. Big guy.
Yeah. It's on the tip of my tongue. I don't know.
Because I know the group was – I think the group was based on the Truth Commission. I just don't remember.
What was that? Oh,
I just cannot, for the love of me, life of me, remember. It's been driving me nuts since I saw that. But that's what I thought, is that you basically had this big guy, and then all of a sudden I think, you know, Vince McMahon saw him dancing. I was like, oh, we're going to do that now. You know. It might be fun for a while, you know, as a low card gimmick kind of thing, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of the 24/7 level, you know, so it'll give him something to do and to be on TV doing. And, you know, I don't think it has any legs, but at least it'll buy us a pay-per-view or two.
I suppose, maybe.
I mean, and it'll be mildly entertaining, you know. He looked like he was into it, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think you were a little bit higher on that than I was. I was just watching this going, what is
– No. I mean, I was saying the same thing, but it's like, you know, sometimes people stop and look at train wrecks. I mean
– Oh, true. That's true. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm saying like I'm putting it in the point of view of like when they do storylines like these, that it could have like a – if you're a wrestling fan, you're not going to be into it. But if you're a sports entertainment fan like Jericho, then, you know.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. I mean, seriously, and at least they put all this in one segment. You had the Lotharios with the kiss cam, which for whatever reason, McAfee was really happy they brought back.
So happy.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to let you have it. You can just have that. And then, you know, so they put that and the, you know, and the Shanky thing and that, I mean, and again, to the cartoonish thing, that bop on the head. Which I was like, really? I mean, it was just so weird. You know, but it's like it's 24/7 stuff, and sometimes it's entertaining, sometimes it's trash. I have my fingers crossed that, you know, Shanky might be at least somewhat fun. You know, I really wish I remember the guy's name. It's like on the tip of my tongue, and I cannot, but yeah.
Yeah. No, that's well said. I mean, I think, it's just –
Oh, but yeah, it is Tejana Bomb. Yeah, I heard Tejada Bomb, and I'm like, well, you know.
Okay, good.
So it is Tejana. That makes a lot more sense.
Good. All right, 443. We will head over to you. Thank you so much for holding. Thanks for calling. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, it's Kyle from Baltimore. How are you doing?
Kyle, doing well, man. What did you think of SmackDown?
I thought it sucked. Blink period. I thought it was a bad show.
Well, tell us how you really feel, Kyle. Jeez.
I'm not. It's been. it's been a recurring theme week after week where they clearly don't care about SmackDown. There's the lack of star power is rarely clear because Roman Reigns doesn't want to show up on Raw. He doesn't want to defend the titles at all. He's just there to talk, and it's not about him. The women's division has been completely garbage. I could care less about anything on, like, because Raquel and Ronda is the only thing they care about, and that's already too early to do, but what else can they do? The lack of star power in the women's division, too, is also lacking. With, you know, you have backstage, you finally see Xia Li, this one day she's there, then she's gone. Aaliyah doesn't matter. Shayna doesn't matter. Natalya doesn't matter. The lack of star power, and Sasha and Naomi are gone, and now it's even 10 times worse. So it's like, if you look over on Raw, it's like, you have Becky, Bianca, Asuka. There's star power on Raw that I like. When you go over to SmackDown, who do they have? Happy Corbin, Madcap Moss, not really doing anything with the Usos or Roman Reigns being sold a double champion. So what? Who cares if they're not going to defend the titles at all? Or if Roman's not going to be on Raw? It's kind of surprising that the Usos are going to be on Raw, but not Roman Reigns. So why is that? What is going on here with Roman Reigns? I know everyone likes him, right? And that's all well and good. He is the top actor of the company. That's all well and good. But it doesn't matter if he doesn't show up on the show and he doesn't defend the titles or doesn't even care at all about feuding with anyone. How can Becky make it work as double champion, even though that lasted a month, but Roman Reigns has been champion for now, it's been like a couple months at this point, and he's not on the show, and he doesn't want to defend his titles, and he's like, it doesn't matter if he's the top star or not. If he's not on the show, why should I care? And I really don't. If anyone else likes him, that's their own personal opinion. I just feel like that's a complete waste. So,
well, I think there's you know, diminishing returns to his star power I don't want to say it exclusively happens all the time this way, but I mean, if you pick your spots with him and you don't overexpose him as a major star, like, then he naturally is going to come across as one more effectively. Like, you know, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, Cody right now to a certain extent. Those guys are all top stars in the business, but, you know, we see him every single week, so the shine is off. So that's one thing at play, I think, in regards to Roman Reigns. The other thing is, like, hey, he negotiated a good contract for himself. He's going to work less dates. So, I mean, I don't want
to
spend
the
belt.
But why is he a double champion, then? That's the case, so.
Well,
I mean, that's
yeah,
what, and that, that's
different.
Fine too. So,
it's a different question. And you know, Javier, like, is that going to damage Roman? You know, the fact that he's got these belts, but he's not going to be around. Like, okay, it's hurting the show a little bit. We're starting to see that already. But what about for Roman Reigns? You know, just as a star on SmackDown, what does this do for him exclusively?
Well, I mean, you end up in the same situation with Brock when he was the heel, people were just complaining that he wasn't around. He you know, absconded with the title, and he would only, you know, how, 6 months in between defenses? And that created resentment towards Brock until he came back as a babyface. So I think you will end up people resenting Reigns for not being around if he has the same sort of schedule that Brock does. They have said that he's still going to be on TV as much as he has been, that his reduced schedule is only house shows in general. But they kind of said this, like, and then he's off to the next week. So not a good start. It does hurt that he's not on Raw. You know, he is the Raw champion, so him not really showing up to Raw, and, I mean, not even in a video format or any kind of, you know, and that one is, like, worse because that's a three-hour show. I would prefer him showing up on Raw than on SmackDown, to be honest. you know, so it yes, I mean, there's going to be resentment to it, you know, as you know, Kyle's showing, you know, to him being the one that they hitched their wagon to, and he's is, you know, not working because, I mean, because you also don't want to overexpose him. But when you're not doing pay-per-views either, even though there might be your smaller pay-per-views nobody cares for, if there's smaller pay-per-views nobody cares for, then really why put them out?
Yeah.
You know, or, so.
I mean, if you're gonna, if you can be more like organized and smart with how you do this, like, I think you can make it work, but you have to be buttoned up across the roster and across your show. Like, you have to make sure that, okay, if Ronda's not going to be on Hell in a Cell and Roman's not going to be on Hell in a Cell, like, that Becky or that Bianca Belair title match has to be, you know, tip top. Like, and that has to be in, like, you know, a main event level worthy feud and match that you can plug in there.
Point build too, by the way, as well. You think about it, he had his announced Becky Lashley to be in the match. It's going to be, and they have only one more show next week to build that match up. So Hell in a Cell is such a weak show as it is because they only have one more Raw match to hype up this show. It's like, it's such an afterthought. That's the other problem too.
Well, yeah, and get used to it because apparently from what I've read, they're shifting away from the pay-per-views because that's money that they already have from Peacock. So they're smaller. I mean, they're still going to put their effort behind like the SummerSlam. They're essentially their big four. They wanted to Money in the Bank to be, you know, part of the big five, but obviously now that they moved to the smaller venue, it didn't happen. Those pay-per-views, which are, you know, like the Hell in the Cells and Backlashes and stuff like that, they're just going to be like essentially like a bonus show where you might actually get some finishes for once. But outside of that, you know, I don't expect them to be really built up, you know, with those be where major stuff happens.
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know. I'll go back to Moon's Division as well because, to me, I'm watching this, and like you said earlier about the backstage stuff, I'm looking at this, I'm like, this is your roster, honestly? It's terrible. Who is Ronda supposed to face out of these people? That's a credible threat. I mean, you saw Xia Li that just appeared out of nowhere. Again, she comes in, she comes out. You have Aaliyah, she's a big thing, not really. Shotzi, doesn't matter. Shayna, Natalya, that doesn't matter. So it's like, my God, the lack of women on SmackDown is like drastically terrible. And, you know, again, you have Bianca, Becky, Asuka, Alexa, all on Raw. You have top names on Raw, and you have the leftovers on SmackDown, as far as I'm concerned. So what are they planning on doing with the women's division when they all filled them? They're not really all that hype, and they're kind of low card talent tonight can't be. I don't see any of them realistically defeating Ronda Rousey. So what do you think about that entire situation with the women's division?
Javier, what do you think?
Over on SmackDown, I think they're just setting up the women that we saw in order for Rousey to essentially steamroll through them on the smaller pay-per-views if she's in, you know, or on SmackDown. You know, so you'll see her take on Xia Li and then, you know, and all these people. I think you're going to get a bigger match with Shayna Baszler because if you're paying attention, yeah, there was a Shayna Baszler Rousey standoff moment, and I don't think they really touched. So I think that's ultimately her next big opponent is going to be Shayna Baszler, and I think they're going to do, you know, like play up the Queen of Spades. You know, she's you know, the submission magician and all that other stuff. I think they're going to, you know, ramp her up for her to be like her next credible threat, and the fact that they're, you know, she comes from the MMA world. You know, and they could play on, you know, their relationship outside of their past relationship. I think they could do stuff with Shayna Baszler. Plus, you know, Shayna Baszler is credible because she's an actual fighter. or was an actual fighter. So I think that's the next big one. And then probably after that, her next big one will likely be Bayley, because she's still out there somewhere in the ether. And then after that would be ultimately it's going to be Becky at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of too, was hey, that moment with Shayna Baszler wasn't an accident. It's a card that they haven't played yet that they can play. And you know, I think that's a good like kind of holdover feud for Ronda until you get to the the SummerSlams and your other big events. Like I think you can heat Baszler up. She needs some work. I don't think she's ready right now for that, but you know, give it some time. I think she does have credibility. She is a fighter. She's got the connection to Ronda. Like that to me makes the most sense. And I think you're going to see her just kind of mow down some of those other women on the roster until Bayley comes back or Charlotte comes back or Sasha Banks comes back. Who knows? You know, I just think that, I could totally see them trying to hold Baszler versus Ronda and do that at SummerSlam. I don't, you know, you could maybe pull that off. Bayley versus Ronda at SummerSlam, you could absolutely pull off. So, you know, we'll see, but I'm with you on that, Javier. I think that's the trajectory that she's on at this point. Real quick, Javier, while we're talking about Ronda, because we didn't get to spend too much time on her yet, I just don't feel that there's a buzz for her as a star or as a champion right now. I mean, yeah, like nope. She kind of gets a decent little pop, and she goes out there and she does her thing. But you know, during Ronda's first run, like she had an it factor about her, and like her unique style, like I think it was brand new at that point. So it felt fresh to watch, and she was engaged because it was her first time out there. She was going on, you know, that run. Like I just don't see that from her right now, and I don't see the crowd reaction for her either. You know, what in your opinion, what does she have to do to kind of bring that back? Unless you disagree, you know, on the premise.
You know the little memory flashy thing from Men in Black?
Yes.
Use that and make people forget that she had ever had that earlier run. I think she never recovered from the Becky Lynch thing. Because the thing is, when she first premiered, her first feud was with Stephanie McMahon, right?
They had the WrestleMania, the tag team match.
WrestleMania 34,
yeah. So you are already coming up against, you know, someone who's a established heel that you really want to get, you know, beat up, and you have Ronda Rousey coming in, and she showed that she came in, you know, so she's an outsider. She showed that she came in ready to wrestle, and knowing what she was doing, because you know she trained hard for this. She was taking it serious. She wasn't as a tourist, and that won her some converts, and I think that's why people were with her. Until the moment that Becky Lynch caught fire and people wanted Becky Lynch and then wanted Becky Lynch and Ronda. And then they're like, no, but we already have Ronda and Charlotte penciled in. They didn't pivot. And you ended up with, you know, what you ended up was with resentment towards Ronda and, you know, instead of everything. And I think that has carried over, even though people are like happy to see her. I think there's a level that, you can't capture the you know, wow, here's an outsider that's really, you know, cares for the business. Similar to Pat McAfee, you know, people like Pat McAfee because he takes what he did in the ring seriously. It wasn't a joke for him. Same thing with her in the ring. I mean, obviously then she got upset because of the, you know, people turned her heel and all that stuff, but, you know, and then, yeah, and she's quirky, and then that also comes out, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of things about her because, you know, that earlier factor overcame her quirkiness, and once that, like, that veneer disappeared, people saw her more, you know, for what, you know, who she is, and I still like her, but I could understand why some people are like still resentful over, you know, how everything went down with Becky and stuff like that. And I think she's still carrying some of that weight.
Yeah. I also think she's miscast too. I mean, I think she's just more natural as a heel. But it's clear at this point that that's just not something she wants to be. So she's not playing that role, but I think her natural kind of tendencies and instincts are heelish in nature. And she can't lean into that.
I think she fits more like a, I mostly agree with you, but I think you could run her like a Moxley kind of character.
Sure.
So someone who just likes beating up people, and then they could be, and if they're beating up the heels, she's a face. And if she's beating up the face, she's the heel.
That could absolutely work too. Yeah, for sure. Kyle.
Yeah.
Back to you for any final points on SmackDown tonight.
I mean that's my main point, is that was when it comes to SmackDown. Now again, this is how I personally feel about it. But when it comes to when I watch SmackDown, I'm watching what they're doing with Ronda, what they're doing with Reigns, what they do with the women's division in general, and also the men's division. It's so weak. They don't care about anyone but Roman Reigns. Again, like I said before, he could be a big star he wants to, but if he's not on Raw or if he's not defending the championship, why should I care? He doesn't matter, feels like, to me at all. And Ronda really doesn't matter either, because the whole women's division on SmackDown and makes Raw 10 times better. I don't know how they're going to hype up Hell in a Cell next week with the lack of – with announcing no matches on the SmackDown side at all for the show. So, and I know it doesn't matter, but they still have a pay-per-view to have, and they've mentioned no SmackDown matches. So to me, again, Roman is not good and not doing anything, and Ron is not doing anything. But that's all I have for you, but thanks for a call.
Thanks for making it, Kyle. Have a good holiday weekend. Always good to talk wrestling with you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, so Javier, a couple topics that we just didn't get to here, and then we'll wrap up the show. You brought it up at this top, the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens stuff. I got a kick out of that as well. Like, that to me, you know, there's a place for that in WWE wrestling, and there's a difference, like, in what we saw between those two in terms of, like, the comedy and just the overall shenanigans that was that segment. It plays better than the shanky comedy stuff. And you hit the nail on the head in my opinion, which is these guys are just great at what they do. You know, they're able to walk the fine line. There's nuance in their performance. And because they have that they can make something like this work. And so I enjoyed this segment for what it was. How about you?
Yeah, they understand their characters. They understand who they're playing. And so once you have that pat down pat, you think on how you're going to react. The psychological, like, work underpinnings of the segment was amazing, because not amazing. I'm over exaggerating, but comparatively speaking, what WWE puts out, it's, you know, the fact that, you know, how Kevin Owens approaches is like, hey, you do know that they don't care about you, right? And like Sami Zayn is playing cognitive dissonance, where he's being forced to see a truth that he's been, you know, hiding from, and then the reaction that he has is a natural reaction. You're like, you know, you push away and you say, shut up, I don't want to hear it. And then, you know, later on it sank in, and you get that other segment in the back where he's, you know, asking, you know, asking the Usos, hey, you know, what is this? You know, are you really manipulating me? Kevin Owens got to him. And, so that part from Sami Zayn's point of view was great. I mean, the storyline went in this case was, you know, I felt bad for Sami Zayn because the Usos, that was the most heelish thing. That was more heelish and got more heel heat from me than that opening segment from the Usos. Because here's someone who's obviously, like, damaged, And, you know, they're like manipulating and using him to get, you know, what, just to get a leg up, you know, or even for giggles. So I, you know, that level, I mean, that was kind of like the storytelling they were telling during the, you know, the Thunderdome era, you know, that was the, you know, what we called the more, I forgot the name of the show. Wade likes, he's going to kill me. I don't watch it. So, Succession.
Succession.
Yeah.
Yeah. Succession, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, it had nuance. And on Kevin Owens' part, when Sami Zayn tells him, yeah, that's Elias, obviously. Everybody knows that's Elias. You know, it's obvious that he's Elias. And the fact that he hugs him and he, like, cries, you know, a part of it is played a little bit for laughs, but there's also, like, a sadness to it. So, you know, it was compelling TV because it showed more than – it showed nuance and emotion and nuance in relationships that instead of just like what I mentioned earlier, the cartoonish aspect of – and bad cartoon, by the way. Bad cartoon aspect of, you know, you only have one emotion and it's this you know, Raquel Rodriguez coming out and smiling, you know, that sort of thing. There was nuance between them and they bring that into the character.
Really well said. It's layered, you know, and yeah. And I think that's important. And you know, I say this a lot because WWE is the company that they are, and you know, for what they do on a week to week basis, many hours a week, like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are, you know, they're not, in all likelihood, they're not going to be your world champions, but they have significant value to the company because they can pull off stuff like this that they did tonight. And I don't want to oversell it, but you know, there's value in that and being able to, you know, effectively work that type of segment. And I got a kick out of it. I got a kick out of both of them. The hug was great because you're right. There was nuance for sure.
Yeah, and that hug came from it's just you see his shoulders sag and it's relief because what he's feeling is relief and he starts crying because he's, you know, he's like they've been lying to him, they've been manipulating him, and that's somebody, you know, because he's being gaslit, and you know the fact that there is someone who finally trusts him, you know, and tells him yeah, you know that. You know, and then to get later slapped in the face when they get into the argument, he goes, I was lying to you. That's obviously, and then he feels personally hurt because, you know, this guy was lying to me. Just, you know, it was just really well done drama. That was like the most drama they've done in a long time. It was simple and it was great and it was compelling. It was, you know, and I really enjoyed it. And I'm like, yeah, go to Raw. Raw could use you, Sammy, and
yes,
do
yes.
Some more good stuff like this.
Yes, exactly. Oh, man. All right, Javier, anything else in your notes for tonight that we didn't talk about? It's weird because there just wasn't that much on this show. We've hit it all from a bullet point perspective, but anything else that we missed that you wanted to note before we wrap this thing up?
Let me go over my notes.
You mentioned at the top that you had something that if nobody brought it up.
Yeah, I'll say that for last just a minute. We have Shanky with them hammering in the skyscraping Shanky. So,
oh my gosh, yeah.
I mean, that shows that he's in line for a push because they gave him a nickname that they repeated like 900 times during that. We also had the Max Dupree.
Yes. Oh, good. Yep.
So have you talked about that yet?
No, I haven't talked about that yet. I don't. So here's the thing. I know name changes are frowned upon, you know, because people don't like change. LA Knight wasn't the greatest name either. So I didn't have any like really big qualms about him losing it. But man, he is a good talker. And I, you know, he to me, you know, we haven't seen him be able to work on the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn level yet, but there's parts of him where you're like, hey, you know, I think, you know, this guy can make a lot of this work. I'm interested as to who kind of that first, the first guy or woman is going to be. But I think it's not going to be main event, but as a, you know, it's a serviceable mid card, little faction. So I'm okay with it. I kind of want to see where it goes.
Yeah, he's someone who also understands character, and you can see he's already developing it as he has no concept of personal space. He will get into your
personal
space.
That is tremendous. Yes.
You know, and so you already just stuff like that, you already have a general idea of what his character's like and how he's abrasive and stuff like that. So again, that's actual character work. So I really liked that. I mean, my issue with the name change is more the fact that, you know, we know him already in the from the WWE. He was already a WWE employee with a name, and we're going to go ahead and change it for no reason. And sometimes you cop to it, like with Butch, you know, where you say, oh, that's his nickname and that's what we call him by. And then sometimes you don't, like, you know, Gonzalez and Rodriguez. Hey, they're both Hispanic last names.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Any venture a guess as to who the, you know, his first client is going to be?
I mean, it, the name of his group is Maximum Male Model. So I'm assuming he's going to be. If it's someone who's already on the roster, maybe he starts managing the Los Lotharios. You know, so outside of that, I don't know. It could be someone from NXT. I don't know. He had been. I think he was managing. Was he the one who was managing somebody in dark? Not dark. That's AW. But what's their dark show?
Main Event. Yeah,
Main Event. That's the one.
Working on that show. I don't know.
As a manager for somebody, I just don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I don't either. It was on Main Event, and it was in dark. You know, dark matches. You know, on untelevised dark matches on SmackDown too. So yeah, but it was a couple people though. I don't think it was just one. So, we'll see, but I think it's got legs. Like, I don't think it's going to he's not going to be managing a world champion anytime soon in all likelihood, but you know, it could work for, you know, just being an act that eats up minutes of content on a week to week basis.
Yeah, and to bring it full circle to what I was mentioning before, no one brought it up. My biggest issue with, and this is not the kind of thing I normally, you know, get upset over, but my biggest issue with the opening of the show is that they came out looking all serious and stuff, and considering the fact of, you know, what happened earlier in the week, what they were talking about, it felt like they were breaking character. They were referring to, you know, 12 years ago. And them being here, and I thought they were going, and because they kept going with that for so long, my initial thoughts, and you know, in the serious nature they were taking, that they were going to lead into referring to the events that happened earlier in the week. And then, you know, and you know, because they were talking about their personal lives, and you know, and I'm thinking they're, you know, I'm expecting them to say, you know, hug your loved ones or something along that line, because it seemed like they're breaking character. But as it kept going, and particularly when they paused and then they look at each other, and there was like this moment of silence, and you know, the emotion, you know, and plus they're emotional. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking. As it kept going, I'm like, oh man, they're just setting up a swerve, you know, but my mind was already like there. So it's like, you know, so I don't know if other people felt that way, but that's kind of the way I saw it, you know, with the presentation in the beginning, and then, you know, doing this, you know, with this emotional thing. And then, you know, and then you get that, you know, the swerve of like, haha, we're just kidding. We hate the fans, you know? It bothered me, and it had already tired me for the night.
Yeah. I mean, I totally see how you could get there. Like, I didn't go there first with it, but you know, I can absolutely see how you got there. And it's just another, you know, another reason why you just like, don't mess around with that. I just don't understand what was wrong with, hey, we just won this huge match last week. Let's go to the ring and talk about it. Talk about the match itself. Talk about, you know, their history as a tag team in WWE. Let's just sell the win in a really big way. And for some reason, you know, they got cute with it. And the other reason why I think it was maybe jarring for me is you don't see that too much from the Bloodline act. Like they pretty much like to a T, you know, kind of know the role that they're playing. They know the job when they go to the ring of what they're trying to do and trying to get over. And it usually is serious, you know, emotional stuff. And so that made this jarring as well. Where it's like, really? Like, we're doing this now? Like, that's not, you know, outside of the stuff that you're talking about, that's not their character either.
And also, because you kind of touched on it, following up on the events of the previous SmackDown, which I thought was a phenomenal ending,
yes.
Where it felt dangerous. This is like I haven't had that feeling, you know, at the end of the show of there actually being like a dangerous thing in a very long time. So, you know, it felt visceral. That ending felt visceral with the way that Roman, you know, was at, you know, his acting chops. And I mean, it was great. I mean, it was the way that, you know, the anger and the hatred that he was emoting. And then, you know, to then again shift on your next promo into something more lol ha, you know. It's just, you know, it was like it wasn't a good follow up for that.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly, and I don't know what kind of long term effect it'll have. Maybe none, but it's like, you still, like, this is your top act. Like, be better than that.
I'm wondering if it's just that Heyman wasn't there.
Maybe
to coach them and tell them, hey, this might be a bad idea, and hey.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Javier, we will put a bow on it right there. Thank you so much for joining me. I know we got this feud going, but I do appreciate you taking the time out of your night to chat a little SmackDown, man.
Yeah, dude, it's all jealousy based. You do a great job. So I'm the heel in this. I'm the heel in our feud. You know, it's all jealousy.
Oh my goodness! No, I'm just messing with you. But seriously, great show. Plug your stuff. You got a bunch coming up. Talk New Japan Pride and everything else going on.
New Japan Pride is on hold because I've got stuff going on at work. Which was, you know, I volunteered for something for that. It was expected to be 2 weeks, and we're into month three now.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. You know, hey, I'll do some extra work for free. Oh, sure, for free. You know, it's permanent. I would have come back a long time ago for that. I got, there's a lot of stuff in the Best of Super Juniors I want to talk about, but you know, and Ibushi stuff. So, whether I am still doing this stuff, I will be on for the G1 because the G1 is my favorite time of the year. So, I've sat for Best of Super Juniors. Best of Super Juniors has been really good, you know, now that the traveling is better.
Real quick, it has been really good. The main event last night's show,
yes,
was fantastic.
I actually texted Radic, and the moment I finished watching it, I'm like, dude, this is by far the best match of the show. And I had mentioned that what held it back was the fact that the fans can't chant because in Japan they're still they're not allowed to cheer yet. Supposedly starting in June they'll be allowed to. It's just their bureaucracy. You ever see Shin Godzilla?
I have not, no.
I'd recommend it because Shin Godzilla, just like the original Godzilla, was a response to you know, the nuclear bombing. This one was a response to the Fukushima disaster, and it represents the bureaucracy and how that issue was exacerbated because of the overwrought Japanese bureaucracy. So they do that. That's kind of like the theme of Shin Godzilla, is that they have a chance to stop them, but it's the bureaucracy gets in the way because they have to make sure that my favorite scene is that there's a scene where, they're going to kill Godzilla because he's in a weakened state. And all of a sudden there's a guy, an old man walking across the street, and they can't fire because they can't look bad by killing a civilian. So they decide not to, you know, kill Godzilla and have a chance, and then Godzilla gets stronger. So, and it was that level of bureaucracy, which is why I find hilarious that they set a specific date when they, when they could start cheering. And, like, you know, from one day to the other, it's not like much is going to change. If you already made the decision it's going to be okay in, like, 3 days, why just not let it happen now?
Yeah.
You know? What's going to change?
Yeah.
3 days. So, you know, but the rumors are that by the time the finals of the show happens, they're going to be, the cheering will be back in the shows, and that's going to like elevate it by far. But yeah, I've been having a lot of fun, and I'm a big fan of Ace Austin, and he's having a great G1 also. So
yeah, he is too. Yeah, it's been a fun watch for sure, especially after the last year.
One of the reasons I kind of really fell off New Japan were those two Best of Super Juniors. The last two of them, because their junior roster, they've always depended on outside talent for their junior rosters for the tournament. And you know, you had like it used to be brutal those last 2 years. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely fun. And for the people who wanted to like check it out, because I believe it was not the last one. I'm not sure if it was the one before that or the one. It's either the one on the 25th and 26th. They're actually, I believe that one's available for free for people who want to check it out. So, check it out if you want to see, you know, different style of wrestling. Kevin Kelly's a great commentator. And give it a shot if you're, you know, a fan of like, you know, just good in-ring action with psychology. And good camera work. I did write that in my notes. I forgot to mention what held back the main event for me, the six-man tag, was the camera work was atrocious.
Yeah, it was really bad. Yep.
I counted three, but the camera was the cameras were changing so often. There probably were more that I missed, where they would cut a camera angle and miss the move. Miss the first impact of the move, or miss the end of the move, or miss the immediate selling of the move. I'm not talking about like selling long-term selling. I'm talking about like the guy gets hit and they're cutting to a fan reaction. So,
right.
You know, which, you know, particularly after I just watched 30 between the last 2 days, 30 matches of New Japan. And I love their presentation in terms of how they present the in-ring action. This was just – it was jarring. It was really jarring, particularly this main event. It was beyond the pale. And, I can't wait to I'm blanking on the name of their director.
Oh, God.
Kevin Dunn.
Kevin Dunn, yes.
So, oh, and yeah. Kurgan. That was who we were thinking of.
Kurgan.
Yes.
See, boy, okay, we have to get off the air now.
All of you listening that were also struggling like we were, you're welcome.
Yes, no, not one person emailed saying, hey, it's Kurgan.
Dancing Kurgan, yes. Funny how the mind works. So
amazing. Well, thank you, Javier. And everybody check out Javier's columns this weekend, next weekend.
Yeah, Primer
previewing
for Nothing, and then Hell in a Cell, so.
Yep, absolutely. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn. Wade will be on the VIP side of things. And remember, go VIP, guys. Give us a shot. PWTorch.com/goVIP. We've got a sale going on right now. So take advantage. There's two pay-per-views coming up and a busy summer of wrestling with Forbidden Door and SummerSlam and everything else that's going on. Now's a really good time to try us out. You can check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas as a VIP member. It's a show about the art of wrestling, and we took a look at the Double or Nothing card on this week's show. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, I guess, we did a live watch along for Adam Cole versus Dax Harwood, just breaking that match down as we watched it. So go VIP, check it out. I think you'll be happy. Be happy that you did. Also make sure pwtorch.com is a regular stop for you. We got it stocked with news and all the show reports that you need throughout the week in wrestling. We've got hits and misses columns. I've got some editorial columns up there. Make that part of your wrestling fix on a daily basis, pwtorch.com, and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. We've got some really cool videos up there. Robert Vallejos just dropped a really fun video on the Sasha Banks, Naomi WWE situation. So check that out. Find us on YouTube and subscribe. We got new content going up every single day. Follow the brand on Twitter at PWTorch. And you can follow me on Twitter at ZHaydornTorch. For Javier, I'm Zach, and we'll catch you guys next time.